Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Parker Fleming is our guy who writes up Subsaccolitis, and he gave you five thoughts today in a column. You should go check it out. Subscribe to Subsaccolitis, his free Grizzlies and NBA draft Substack, and all monetary support, if you give it, goes to St. Jude because he's a great human being. He's on X at @Paka_Flocka. Parker, how's it going, brother?
Gabe, it is great to be back on the Gabe Kuhn Show.
Yes, great day show, man. On a Tuesday instead of a Friday. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Long time no see. But yeah, good to talk. I'm glad we have stuff to talk about.
Yes, so let's get right into it. We do. Okay, I just want to bring this up off the top. Like, people can have their criticisms. People can talk about value in contracts. What I saw from the Grizzlies in day one, or really hour one, hour two of free agency yesterday, this is about as aggressive and focused as I can remember them being. Like, do you share those sentiments?
I mean, they didn't waste any time, you know? And here's the thing, too, worth noting, it's not about the order of reporting. It's about the order of sequencing. So, like, they went ahead and got all that out there before they figured out what they're going to do with Cole Anthony, you know? Because, like, I know, like, they need to clear a cap for Jaren, but, like, imagine if, like, they just – if it was actually – reported by sequencing, where it's like, oh my gosh, like, what's going on? It's been almost 24 hours in free agency and we haven't heard anything about the Grizzlies. You know, Zach Kleiman, he broke the dam for the free agency news with Jaren Jackson Jr., Santi Aldama, and Cam Spencer right off the bat. So, but yeah, I do think, I was actually listening to you and Connor earlier, you know, talk about the money and stuff like that. I have a proposition. I wish, because of how much this money is going to balloon, and soon enough we're going to be, like, not even blinking an eye at $100 million, can we just start reporting stuff as percentage of the cap? Like, I don't care. Like,
right. Yes,
these guys are going to make millions on top millions of dollars, more money than I could even imagine to see in my life. Like, just tell me what percentage of the cap it is, because that will allow much better context. Like, hey, Santi Aldama is going to be getting almost $20 million a year, but guess what? It is 10.5% worth of the salary cap. Like, that's such a small, small fraction of the salary cap.
Right, for
that's
sure.
That's my opinion, at least.
For sure. Now, with the value of Jaren and Santi, let's start with Jaren. 5 years, $240 million max extension. I know NBA Twitter has their things to say about Jaren, but when you look at the value of that contract and how it could age through 2030, like, how do you feel about the Jaren deal, right around 48 mil per year?
Yeah, I mean, again, at the end of the day, like, this is the new norm. This is market value for, I mean, this isn't even just, like, you know, Memphis bias or anything. Go ask the All-NBA voters. He was fewer than 15 votes away from being named third team All-NBA. By that alone, he's a top 20 player in the league. You know, he had a top 20 season last year. And if you, like, go down his resume, defensive player of the year, three-time first-team all defense, two-time all-star. Like, this is, I mean, he's been a blocks leader before. Like, this dude's a bona fide two-way star. And you pay whatever it takes to get talent of Jaren Jackson Jr.'s caliber in your building. And this is just something you do. Because, you know, let's say, like, you play with your thumbs a little bit. Oh, let's wait till next summer because this is, like, Jaren could get 5 years, 296 in. But, hey, guess what? You know, a lot more teams are going to have cap space next year, including the Los Angeles Lakers, who could easily see Jaren as a fit next to Luka Doncic. So I think, you know, you did what you had to do. And, I mean, frankly, like, when you begin to look at these other contracts coming up, Jaren Jackson Jr. barely makes the max. Barely. Like, this is such a good contract. And I think he'll, like, finally turn 30 at the end of his contract as well. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just kind of weird to me, the idea of, you know, just, like, scoffing at this Jaren Jackson Jr. number. Because even if you try to, like, make it up in the aggregate, like what they've been doing with Desmond Bane, they're making up his production and skills in the aggregate. You can't do that with Jaren Jackson Jr. You pay whatever it takes to keep him in Memphis, and I'm glad that there's no wasted time with Zach Kleiman, the front office, or Jaren Jackson Jr. with this. Like, they got this out there, because that this more than anything just further solidifies Jaren Jackson Jr.'s commitment to Memphis and the commitment to bringing a championship here. And I there's no notes, no complaints for me. I like this extension for Jaren Jackson Jr.
Now with Santi, you brought up it's 10.5% of the cap, and the cap's gonna, you know, the cap is going up, so you still feel good about where he's at. You made the case, and I know this is more of a polarizing topic, the Santi contract, because it was 17.4. We talked about last Friday, 15 per year. You said 17 may be where they priced out. It's going to be 17.4 per year. You made the case, though, when you look at the Santi Aldama archetype around the league, like a near 7-footer, 6'11", dribble pass shoot, 40%, near 40%. From three in playoff games. You made the case this is like a very good value at 17.4 per year.
Look, I'm just going to like, yes, I know what you're alluding to. In my column, I did say that Santi Aldama's skill set doesn't grow on trees. Chip Williams, friend of the platform, he did one of those Darko career progression charts. Santi, by the end of last year, was better efficiency-wise than Trey Murphy III, Cam Johnson, and Naz Reid. Those are all guys 20-plus, and all guys that Grizzlies fans have said, hey, trade three or four picks to go get Cam Johnson or Trey Murphy, you know? And Santi's coming in at like $16, $17 million per year, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hey, and like, look, I've always been a fan of those guys. Even with Naz Reid, I was on record saying last year I would have traded Naz Reid for the ninth pick for Naz Reid. I would have done that. But what you're alluding to, of guys 6'11 or taller that have averaged 12 points, 6 rebounds, 2.5 assists, shot 4 threes a game at a 35% clip. It is literally Kevin Durant, Karl-Anthony Towns, Dirk Nowitzki, Nikola Jokic, Victor Wembanyama, Kristaps Porzingis, and Santi Aldama.
And you even lowered the height parameter at one point. It's the same
names. Yeah,
6'9".
I lowered it. Lowered it. And then you add DeMarcus Cousins, Nikola Vucevic, LeBron James, Antoine Walker, Denny Avdija, then Leo Gallinari, Blake Griffin, Dario Saric, and Luol Deng. Like, a lot of that. I have your complaints about Santi Aldama's defense. You know what? I get it. But at the end of the day, you need dudes that make shots. You need dudes that make plays. And Santi Aldama does that at 7 foot. You just don't see that in the even in the modern NBA, where size is getting the size and skill are just getting exponentially bigger each and every year. And still there's not many players doing it like Santi Aldama. Like, I just don't understand how anyone could even just be flabbergasted at that number. In fact, I'm flabbergasted that it's that low, especially after the Naz Reid deal, especially after the Jabari Smith Jr. deal.
Yep, for sure, for sure. All right, now Ty Jerome, the new acquisition. I have to give credit because our ongoing Gabe Kuhn show group chat, it got active the past couple of weeks, and you said to us, I believe this was on Saturday? It on Saturday night? You said,
yeah,
do
Saturday
we like
night.
Ty Jerome? Do we like Ty Jerome? And Connor responded, don't hate him. Playoff stuff was a little worrisome, but not going to worry about that too much. Basically, if you can get your hands on him, go ahead and get your hands on him. So I'll give you credit for that. But Ty Jerome, 3 years, $28 million. It's the first non-minimum outside free agent signing that they have had since 2019. Like, how do you, first of all, before we just get to the value of the contract, how do you like the fit for Ty Jerome in Memphis?
Yeah, I really like the fit. I know people are going to point to, you know, multiple point guards on the roster with now John Morant, Scottie Pippen Jr., and now Ty Jerome. I mean, Ty Jerome, 6'5", obviously, you know, 6'4 wingspan. So, you know, the T-Rex wingspan shooting yard
right.
archetype still lives on in Memphis past Desmond Bane. But, I mean, Ty Jerome was one of the most productive permanent players last year. And personally, I like this more than, you know, the other alternative for the cap room exception would have been spending that on Brooke Lopez or Luke Kornet or Clint Capella. Like, I like what they're doing with Ty Jerome because at the end of the day, in today's NBA, you need multiple sources of playmaking. And when the Grizzlies lost Desmond Bane, my worry became, oh man, like I like how they, you know, they have fortified their size on the wing and their defense with guys like Cedric Howard and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, as well as the rise and prominence for Jalen Wells. But I think they need a little bit more creation. And I know over the weekend, I made a post about Nikhil Alexander-Walker. He got a bag. Shout out to the Atlanta Hawks,
yep,
my new East team.
Yep, for sure.
But with Ty Jerome, like one of the most productive per minute players in the league, he also shot 40% from three. So like another thing too is like, hey, they're letting go. They just traded Desmond Bane. They're letting Luke Kennard walk. Where's the shooting going to come from? Another example of, you know, with Ty Jerome, he brings that source as well. But I want to bring this specific stat up that I, you know, I got bored and decided to search today. So obviously, Tomas Eastola's offense is going to be heavy pick and roll, and you know, John Morant, he's only, you know, he's been playing more so 50 to 60 games a year instead of 60 to 70. Who's going to step in? Ty Jerome, among players that ran 250 or more pick and rolls this past season, these are the only players that scored more points per possession than Ty Jerome. Tyrese Halliburton, SGA, Damian Lillard, De'Aaron Fox, Kyrie Irving, DeMar DeRozan, Jalen Brunson, and then Ty Jerome. That's it.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good, yeah, if you ask me. So, yeah, but no, I mean, also, we're talking about this guy's going to be making the room exception at $8.8 million starting at salary next season on a 3-year deal. I thought it was going to be a no-brainer. Before his Pacers series, I thought he was going to make at least that $14.1 million non-tax payment level exception.
Right.
And the Grizzlies got him for under $10 million. That's a great deal. Yeah. For a guy like Ty Jerome.
How much do you think that actually played into his value on the open market, that playoff series against the Pacers?
I mean, I'm sure it did. I think also, too, like you have more of like the tax boogeyman out there with the aprons and stuff. That's a real thing out there. Teams don't want to spend their full non-taxpayer mid-level exception because of the worry of being hard capped at those aprons. I'm sure Milwaukee, before signing Miles Turner, wished they could have gotten Ty Jerome as their starting point guard. But I mean, I think it had a little factor into it. I do think there should be context. Like Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland were both hurt, and Ty Jerome had to create, and that Indiana Pacers team was better than all of us thought. They're one win away from an NBA championship. I mean, that still doesn't do a whole lot to your value. I mean, the reason why the difference between like a guy like Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Ty Jerome is like Nikhil Alexander-Walker's value went up over the course of a playoff series, and Jerome's in it. But I mean, look, I always say like, yes, you need 16 game players. I think also too, Ty Jerome might be better than what was shown,
right,
in that series.
He got thrown into the fire. Let's be honest, with the injury to Darius Garland and everything else. Like he had to do some heavier lifting than he was used to doing during the season. And really, I think in the grand scheme of things, that one for 14 game from the field is really bringing down everyone's thought of him. Because he was decent the rest of the series. He was fine.
For sure. And like I think there's somewhere in the middle between like what Ty Jerome, like division of Ty Jerome, and his upside and what he was in the Indiana series. I think there's a truth in the middle somewhere. The defense is a concern for sure, but like this is a guy that can create his own shot, create for others, but also just capable of just taking over a game. And when you're talking about a playoff context, when you're talking about players stepping up, like think about how like in the Indiana series, like guys like Andrew Nembhard and Aaron Nesmith stepped up, Obi Toppin stepped up. Oklahoma City, you know, Aaron Wiggins isn't like the best defender, but like he scored 18 points in a finals game. You know, there's a truth in the middle with Ty Jerome, but like that, like it's one of those things too. Like, yes, you need 16 game players, but you also need guys that can, you know, get you to a point where you're in position for the playoffs, and that's what Ty Jerome's going to do over the course of the regular season, at the very least.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I try to provide context and a reference point for the listeners out there that are Grizzlies fans, and I don't know if you got to hear me earlier. I kind of likened it to this, the Ty Jerome idea and what he could be for this team. With 44% from three and the playmaking, like he's kind of the juiced up version of the vision that the Grizzlies had when they traded for Luke Kennard a couple of years ago. Like, it feels like the playmaking is a step up. Shooting, you know, obviously Luke Kennard's done it for longer, but the percentages are very, very similar. Like, I get the concerns on defense. I get the concerns of one real big year where he finished third in sixth man of the year voting. That's his one, like, big point of production in his entire career. He's only 26 years old. But, like, is that a fair sentiment, kind of the juiced-up version of the vision that this Grizzlies franchise had for Luke Kennard when they traded for him?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you listen to Zach Kleiman and Taylor Jenkins talk about bringing in Luke Kennard, when they did, they said, hey, he's a better playmaker than people realize. And like, let's be real. Like, I'm going to be real. Like, I've done a whole lot of Luke Kennard talk on this show. Luke Kennard had a very good run in Memphis. And truthfully, like, yeah, he had a bad last 2 months. But, like, you know, I just think that, you know, Ty Jerome is that version. Like, he's not – he can get a shot off a little better. He can. He's obviously a
more aggressive playmaker last year for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good thought. I will say too, with one of those things, I don't want like the whole like, oh, this is one season. I don't want to confuse ability and opportunity.
Right.
Because
that's fair.
He's been more of a two way player contract wise. If you look at a sophomore season with OKC, granted they didn't win a lot of games, 33-game sample because he was a two-way player, but like
right,
23 minutes per game, like 10.7 points, 2.8 40, rebounds.
42% from three, if I'm not mistaken, something like that.
42% from three. And then you know, he had a pretty solid run with the Warriors. Just, again, his playing time was kind of hindered by the fact that he had the two-way restrictions. And then he goes to Cleveland, plays two games, gets hurt, and he comes back. And has a really good season. So, like, look, I'm not going to – I don't want to have too much, like, rose-tinted glasses and be like, yeah, like, whatever. But, like, I do think that, like, Ty Jerome's a really good NBA player. Mm-hmm. He's a really good NBA guard, and I think he's going to help this Memphis Grizzlies team. To what extent, we'll see. But, like, I mean, if they're getting the first and that he was in Cleveland last year, I mean, that's a heist.
Yes, 100%. All right, now you wrote up what's next for the Grizzlies. Let's start with Cole Anthony's contract. They're going to have to free up that $10 million in cap space. How can they do it? Because it seems like over the weekend they were shopping it, no luck there. You have the thing from Shams yesterday saying that they're trying to let him pick a destination and they'll figure out a trade afterwards. Like, how do you envision this going for the Grizzlies and offloading that Cole Anthony salary?
I personally see more of a wave and stretch to where they can stretch out that final $13.1 million over the course of 3 years. I think it would only be like a $4 million cap hit on their books. Like, that's not terrible, you know? Mm-hmm. Granted, having dead money in the books isn't great, but like, you know what? Like, it's better than attaching a first round pick just to get off his contract, you know? I do think that, like, and something I do kind of maybe we'll explore later, but like, you know, between Cole Anthony's market, Colin Sexton, Nurkic trade, and then the Jazz having to buy out Clarkson, be a smaller guard in today's NBA, you either have to be an offensive supernova, you have to defend your ass off, or you got to be an unbelievable playmaker, or your value's pretty tanked, to be honest. I'm foreseeing some sort of wave and stretch. That way they can more easily open up that cap space for that Jaren Jackson Jr. Renegotiation and extension.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll see what happens there. And then your final thing, you brought up a center replacement for Zach Edey for the first part of next year. And you threw out the idea, and we've been looking at Goga Batadze with the Magic for a while, but you suggested the idea of flipping Conchar or packaging Vince Williams Jr., and Jay Huff to the Orlando Magic for Goga. And the thing is, the Magic do need help with their salary cap numbers because they're trying to re-sign Mo Wagner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I suggest. It would be either Conchar or Vince Williams and Jay Huff. Those are the ones that are feasible in terms of what the Grizzlies can bring back in versus taking out, but also too what or how Orlando's trying to operate. Maybe with that, I think maybe the Vince and Huff one could work, just because they would then shed 3.6 million off their books, something mm-hmm. like that. Seems worthwhile to me, at least, you know. We'll say the market for centers, if you look on Spotrac for NBA free agents and you look for centers, you're not going to be that encouraged, to say the least.
Yeah.
So if they're going to do something, it'll likely be with the trade market. And you know what? We'll see. I mean, Goga, he just kind of fits the mold.
We're losing him. He's in and out. Parker, you're in and out. There we go. Now we got you. Continue. We're good.
Yeah. So I was saying with Goga, he just kind of fits everything. Like, shot blocker, can set screens, good passer, rebounder. Nothing sexy or anything, but he'll get the job done until Zach Edey returns.
Yeah, for sure. Any other options, though? Any other options, or is that sort of the one that you're circling more than others?
It's just tough, just because
there's Nick Claxton noise from some people.
Nick Claxton, if you're hey, let's trade Brandon Clark and John Conchar, maybe, but I don't know. I just don't like the idea of a $20 million center when I'm really going to be one of Zach Edey.
Sure.
I mean, the Kessler stuff is interesting because, you know, I'm just like, do you have to give up a first-round pick for him and also have to decide if you want to extend his contract or not? If this was last summer, I would be more inclined, because you had an entire other season before the extension, because maybe you could have worked up his value to where you could have recouped that first-round pick back. You don't have that turnaround time to recoup a first back. Yeah. So I don't know what that entails. Or maybe you do send out a first, and then you get Edey back, and Clark's still Clark, and you have Kessler, and then maybe you can dangle Kessler like a carrot to the Los Angeles Lakers and get Dalton Connect and that 2031 Lakers first. Maybe you could do that. But I'm just not really enthusiastic about the centers that you can get on the open market. We'll see. You never know. I didn't think that, when they signed Jay Huff, he exceeded my expectations.
Yeah.
Granted, I'm not sold on him being an every night rotation player, but he's the perfect relief pitcher, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, Parker, I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Gabe.
Yes, sir.
Talk next week.
He is Parker Fleming at @Paka_Flock on X. Make sure you go subscribe to his free Grizzlies and NBA draft Substack, Sub-Sack-A-Litis. All right, now, we were going to do this yesterday, but for obvious reasons, with NBA free agency and the Grizzlies moving and shaking within that first hour, we had to postpone it. But the Steelers are trying to load up for next year. Are they going for it? Let me go ahead and answer that question on the other side. So we had a blockbuster trade in the National Football League earlier in the week. Steelers and Dolphins both involved. Dolphins have been trying to offload Jalen Ramsey and his $26 million contract, and they officially did it. Steelers get cornerback Jalen Ramsey, former All-Pro and Pro Bowler. Tight end Jonnu Smith, who reunites with Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator for the Steelers, from their Titans days. The Steelers also get the 2027 seventh-round pick from the Dolphins. And then the Dolphins get All-Pro safety Minka Fitzpatrick and a 2027 fifth-round pick. I'm going to say off top, I don't much get this for either team. I really don't. I don't think it makes either team overly more competitive or better in general. And for the Dolphins especially, it seems to be a money-saving move. I get that. They get off Jalen Ramsey's contract, which they've been trying to do this entire offseason, but they got no real draft compensation. A 2027 fifth-round pick swap for a 2027 seventh-round pick, that makes no difference to me or to them, quite frankly. To me, I think it makes more theoretical sense for the Steelers. But it's just that. It's theoretical, right? Jalen Ramsey's an all-pro level corner at his peak, but he's 30 years old. He's beyond his prime. That doesn't mean he still doesn't have good ball in there. I think he was fine with the Dolphins when he was on the field. Made a Pro Bowl, was an All-Pro, certainly has his moments. And I think when you look at that Steelers cornerback room, it's better. You have Darius Slay already there, even though he's aged. Jalen Ramsey, I think Joey Porter Jr., who they drafted a couple of years ago, can grow into a really good corner, and he's learning from the best in Darius Slay and Jalen Ramsey. But again, you take a hit in your safety room to add more to your corner room. I don't know if it makes you all that much better. Jonnu Smith, he is a good tight end. I want to be very clear about that. He was the NFL's leader in yards after catch among tight ends in 2024-25. That means something. And he quietly had a really good season. 88 receptions, 884 yards, 8 touchdowns, and he was a Pro Bowler. I think when you look at the Steelers side, you have to view this one way. The Steelers are trying to maximize 2025-26. They're going for it. And I see, kind of, in a theoretical sense, again, where that could happen. Darius Slay, Jalen Ramsey, Joey Porter Jr. is one of the most complete cornerback rooms in the NFL. Jonnu Smith, I think, is a scheme fit for Arthur Smith. Reuniting with him after their Titans days. He's been with him before. He's coming off a good season. 29 years of age. Still has a little bit to give. And we know that Arthur Smith, getting into the weeds a little bit, he likes to run 12 personnel. That means one running back and two tight ends. And the way that they had to run 12 personnel with those two tight ends last year, you have Pat Freiermuth, who's a decent tight end, and then you have Darnell Washington. And Darnell Washington, when he came out of Georgia, you thought, okay, maybe he could become a pass catcher. He's basically a sixth offensive lineman. So now when you get into that 12 personnel set with two tight ends, you have two guys in Jonnu Smith and Pat Freiermuth who can run routes and can beat linebackers and safeties. So I can see where they could be a little bit more dynamic there, but the problem I have with that is Aaron Rodgers has never maximized tight ends. Aaron Rodgers does not throw to tight ends. He just has not done it at a very high level throughout his career, so I sort of poke holes in that way. But let's dig a little bit deeper. Connor, I think this is the most true statement I'll say about this entire thing with the Steelers this offseason. If it was 2021, I would be so bullish that this team was going to win the Super Bowl. Right? But there's one problem with that statement. It's 2025. Let's go through the ages of some of the guys that they have on their roster. Aaron Rodgers, 41. Darius Slay, 34. Robert Woods, who's basically their number two wide receiver right now, 33. Cam Hayward, 36 at the D-tackle position. Jalen Ramsey, 30. Jonnu Smith, 29. Also, and this is very, very important, because when you look for precedent in what the Steelers have done, there's just not precedent for it. There's an obvious, incredibly obvious lack of continuity. They lost their leading passer in Russell Wilson. They lost their leading receiver in George Pickens. They lost their leading rusher in Najee Harris. And yeah, you replaced those guys, but you can replace those guys with as much talent as possible. And you still can't sit here and tell me, given all those things, that this team is poised for a successful 2025. There is no precedent in the NFL's history for an NFL team to replace a leading passer, leading receiver, and leading rusher, and then have playoff success or win a Super Bowl. So, for all those reasons, I mean, you can sit here and like what they did. You can, you know, give them a pat on the back for really going for it. But there's so many ways I can poke holes in their plan. I still don't necessarily agree with Steelers fans in the fact that you wanted to blow it all up, get a high pick, restart with a quarterback and all that. I don't think that's the only way that you can still get back into a championship window and have success in the National Football League. I think you can hang around the middle, 9-8, then eventually get lucky with a quarterback and move off into your future. Like, I think that that's what the Steelers are still planning going into the future. But for 25-26, it's hard for me to fully buy into this team. There's a lack of continuity. They're old, and they've sort of aged out of their prime. I think it's very clear the Steelers are still going for it. And, you know, here's another thing on top of all this. The T.J. Watt contract situation is still up in the air. And my question to them, and I asked this question to the Cowboys about Micah Parsons 2 weeks ago Why is this contract situation up in the air? He's led the league in sacks over a five-year period, the last 5 years. He's got 5.5 more.
I'm Dr. Hrini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banner civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Sacks over that period than Myles Garrett, who just got a four-year, $160 million deal. He's the highest-paid non-quarterback in NFL history. And T.J. Watt's been more productive than him. Why are you waiting on this? And here's the thing that really bothers me about it. Maybe they'll get it done here before we get off air. I have no idea. But you're making all these quote-unquote win-now moves and taking this long to get the extension done with T.J. Watt. In my brain, those two things don't jive. So get that deal done and hope that you win a playoff game in 25-26. That's what I'll tell the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. We'll wrap up hour number two with Small Talk right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show next. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, we just got done talking about the Steelers and Dolphins trade. Steelers got Jalen Ramsey and Jonnu Smith. Dolphins got Minkah Fitzpatrick. But Jonnu Smith, the Dolphins tight end from last year, was very good. And without him, Tua Tagovailoa misses one of his greatest targets. He caught 88 balls for 884 yards and 8 touchdowns. A lot of eights. But regardless, they had to find a plan because their tight end room, after they got rid of Jonnu Smith, was Julian Hill, who, Farrell Brown, who, Tanner Connor, who. Yeah, so they didn't really have anybody. So this is their plan. This is what the Dolphins have done today. Dolphins are trading a 2026 sixth-round pick to the New York Giants for a 2027 seventh-round pick and tight end Darren Waller. Darren Waller, for those that don't know, was a Pro Bowler way, 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 way back in 2020 with the Las Vegas Raiders, and he caught for 1,196 yards and 9 touchdowns, 107 catches. Under John Gruden and Derek Carr and that whole squad. But since then, he took a fall in production. Played 11 games in 2021, 665 yards. Played 9 games, starting 6 in 2022, 388 yards. Got traded to the Giants. Giants were hoping to keep him on the field. He didn't stay on the field. Only played 12 games, 552 yards. And then that offseason, at 32 years of age, 31 years of age, I should say, he retired. So he hasn't been in the game for two seasons, but he's going to come out of retirement for the Miami Dolphins, one-year deal worth up to, incentive-laden, $5 million. But what has happened since he's retired? Well, he got married to Kelsey Plum when he was still in Vegas. They divorced after 2 months. He's launched a rap career, or at least tried to launch a rap career. I think he's got a couple face tats now, so that's new. He's added that. But he hasn't played football for 2 years, and the Dolphins hope that he can be the replacement for Jonnu Smith, who was really damn good last year.
Feels like he probably won't be.
Yeah, that's my suspicion. I don't know for sure. Maybe he's gotten the help and the mentality switch he needed stepping away from the game for 2 years.
But he was bad in his last season.
I don't know. Maybe, listen, Giants had a way of, minimizing weapons. So I'm not going to act like I hold that against him too much. But he couldn't stay on the field. And listen, Darren Waller is such an interesting guy because he had substance abuse issues in the early part of his career. And he had to get over it. And he was a wide receiver. And he transferred, had to switch positions to tight end. Big body guy, 6'6", 235, had a couple of good years, but it was just a very short prime. Like, he's overcome a lot, but he has stepped away from the game, and it has not looked like he's been in, like, this great mental space to play football over the past couple of years since he's been out of the game. I don't know how to feel about this for the Dolphins. The Dolphins have just been, a couple of years ago, when they stayed healthy, won, 11 games, made the playoffs, like you thought that they were on the up and up. And then these last two seasons, it's just like, What are you doing? I don't understand. Like Tyreek Hill asked for a trade. I get why he's asking for a trade. You guys have no real direction. And then you make this move here with the Steelers and have no plan at tight end, so you're calling around and you end up settling on Darren Waller? That's insane to me. Like, this team should be better than they are, and it just feels like the front office, Mike McDaniel, everybody has mismanaged the situation so drastically.
It just, I feel like they probably could have found a better option than unretiring Darren Waller.
Rapper, Darren Waller.
True. Rapper. But like right now, Gerald Everett's out there. Mercedes Lewis is still out there.
I know Mercedes.
You know, but there's a couple guys.
Can Mercedes Lewis still run a route?
I don't know.
Wait, he didn't retire?
No. He's not retired? He's listed as a free agent. I wonder if he may have retired.
Wait, hold up.
He's listed as a free agent on what I'm looking at.
I could have sworn he retired. I hope he retired.
I think he may have.
No, he played for the Bears last year.
Good for him.
He had one catch for 2 yards.
What about Hayden Hurst?
Maybe. You just blew my mind. Mercedes Lewis is still trying to play.
Good for him.
He's 41 years old, playing a contact position. This isn't a quarterback or a kicker. What is he doing? I thought he had a good contract in the middle of his career too, with the Packers. I thought.
I wonder how much money he's made over his career.
Damn. Hang it up, Mercedes.
He's been in the league for 19 years.
Can someone offer him like a TV gig? Get him out of the game. I remember him playing I used to watch Colorado. I was a Colorado fan growing up. I remember watching him play against – he was with UCLA with Maurice Jones-Drew. That's when he played in college. It's been that long.
He's made $65 million over 19 seasons. Good for him.
I mean, sure, but he's still playing, so what does that tell you? Golly. Mercedes, hey.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Get up. Damn. You just taught me something today. I could have sworn he retired years ago. That is wild. Wild news to hear. All right. Hour number 3 is on the way. Christian Fowler will lead us off as he normally does on a Tuesday right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.